Welcome back, listeners, to Mo and McGee on Fantasy. It's been a little bit of a hiatus, but we're ready to ramp back up, bring you the best and baddest fantasy news and hottest takes. Logan, how are you doing?
Hot takes is right, Kevin, and this is a special episode. You mentioned it's been a while. You know, we're in the doldrums of the offseason. You know, you had that kind of excitement of the draft, free agency, and now we had mini camps kicking off. You know, that got my blood boiling a little bit, seeing the boys out there in shorts and caps. But now mini camps have wrapped up. We're facing a long stretch here before training camp. And what better way to fill in that long stretch than with a great episode of Mo and McGee on Fantasy? We're going to break down some trades that happened, some people who signed post-draft. We got some rookies that landed in some cool spots. And then, Kevin, very excited for this. We're going to unveil some of our top 10s. I got QBs and wide receivers. Kevin did running backs, tight ends. I think it's going to get a little contentious.
Yeah, it definitely is going to. And, you know, I'm also excited for the very end of the episode. A very special guest. We'll hold you guys waiting. It might be Derek from Derek's Micro Bowl.
Kevin, the anticipation was killing me, and you just kind of...
What do you mean? What do you mean?
I thought you were going to save the name until the end, and then you just said it. Well, okay. Well, see, folks, this is what I deal with on Mo and McGee on Fantasy. I'm really the driver of the ship. You're going to see it in the top 10s that Kevin really has no idea what he's talking about. So,
oh, man, you're about to get roasted.
Here we go into our first kind of segment here. Some quick updates, some fantasy-relevant players who either signed with a new team or got traded. Kevin, where should we hit first?
Yeah, first off, we have Hollywood Brown getting traded to the Cardinals. Ravens picking up, you know, Linderbaum out of the deal. But, you know, Hollywood Brown is definitely the big mover, especially with DeAndre Hopkins out for the first 6 weeks. Well, what does this trade mean to you?
Kevin, I've decided that it doesn't mean much to me.
No,
it doesn't. Hollywood Brown leaves, I think, a really good situation where, yes, the Ravens are run heavy, but he was heavily targeted. I believe he had 25 or at least 20% of that target share there. Lamar Jackson and him were pretty tight. And I think this is one of the more quiet trade requests that I've, like, no one really knew he requested a trade until the trade happened. And it's like, yeah, we had to trade him, didn't want to be here any longer. Actually came out this week at minicamp that he said the offense just wasn't for me in Baltimore, which I guess,
if you drop three or four touchdowns, maybe it's you aren't for the offense, but
exactly. Teach their own. And, you know, the Cardinals, you mentioned, you know, DeAndre Hopkins gonna be out 6 weeks, but Rondale Moore is still there, and it kind of really suppresses that upside, which I was super excited about. I was going to target Rondale Moore a lot this year because second year player showed some explosiveness. But now with Hopkins and Hollywood Brown there, I just really don't know. Is there going to be a super high value target? I don't think so, especially Zach Ertz running up the seams.
Yeah, I'm on the other side of this. I am all over Hollywood Brown.
Oh, no.
Yes, I am. Picking up the connection with Kyler Murray back at Oklahoma. Oh, man. I think you're about to see a Cooper Kupp, Matthew Stafford type connection, but not executed quite as well. I think Hollywood Brown, for me, is squarely wide receiver too. And I'm buying all that I can of him at his current draft position.
Does it worry you a little bit that Kyler has never really locked into a player? You saw that first year in Arizona, Hopkins kind of had a Hopkins type season, 25% target share, all that good stuff. But now, last year, Hopkins didn't have an amazing year. AJ Green had kind of a nice secondary year. Rondale Moore got targeted. Zach Ertz. Is there really enough to go around? What kind of round are you even talking about with Hollywood?
Oh, I think you have to look at him in the fifth. I you know, you probably don't have to wait any longer. He's going to be there, or you don't have to, I'm sorry, hop on it any earlier than the fifth, because he's probably going to be there in the fifth. I think the potential is there. He has the previous connection. Cliff Kingsbury is probably, you know, battling for a job a little bit. There's a lot of people not happy with him in that Cardinals front office. I could see that offense pushing it to the best players, and in my opinion, Hollywood Brown, despite low point totals in his first few years fantasy wise, I think this is an electric landing spot for him.
Kevin, you know it's not safe to smoke crack around babies. Now you just had one. I know you might be learning all the tricks and trades, but smoking cocaine.
I'm still getting the hang of that one.
Okay. Well, after that take, I'm interested to hear what you have to say about AJ Brown, who got traded draft day. We're going to talk Treylon Burks later, so we'll kind of skip that part of it. But AJ Brown on the Eagles now. You got him, Devonta Smith, Jalen Hurts. The carcass of Jalen Reagor is still currently on the Eagles. Dallas Goedert. Eagles have an interesting nucleus there.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the biggest fantasy winner in this trade is Devonta Smith. And not because he's going to, you know, blow up necessarily, but his draft stock is about to get stomped down to basically nothing. You're going to be able to get him really late. He's a very talented receiver. He showed it in flashes as a rookie. He's now going to have a full off season. And he has a year up on AJ Brown in terms of rapport with Hurts. So, you know, I still think AJ Brown's probably the number one wide receiver in that offense, probably gets the most target share. But look to be a little bit sneaky and scoop up Devontae Smith way later than he should be going.
Yeah, I love Jalen Hurts' side of this as well. I mean, he gets a bona fide number one now to go along with what everyone thinks, you know, at least me and you, a kind of ascending Devonta Smith. I mean, for goodness sakes, what a year of football can do, where we go from the guy was a Heisman Trophy winner, one of the best seasons a wide receiver has ever had in college, to now you can probably get him in the ninth, eighth round of fantasy drafts. It's pretty crazy because he was going higher than that last year. Just kind of nuts. You know, AJ Brown, am I going to take him in the second round where he was going last year? Probably not. Just the offense, I don't fully trust Jalen Hurts to kind of feed AJ Brown. But also we've seen he doesn't need many targets to kind of explode. So I'm still there. I'm still valuing him as a third, fourth round kind of target with potential upside.
Absolutely. And on the flip side of this, what do you think of AJ Brown leaving the Titans? That leaves the Titans receiving core wide open. Any takes on that?
Well, Robert Woods, Bobby Trees, experience there. He's for sure the number one guy. We mentioned the other side of this trade was the Eagles used pick 18 to select Treylon Burks, who me and you both loved pre-draft. And this is an ideal landing spot for him. So it probably goes Woods 1A, Treylon Burks 1B, if I had to guess. But it's going to be a lot of Derrick Henry, probably.
A lot of Derrick Henry, to nobody's surprise. So next up here, we have a couple of signings. First off, really quick, Jarvis Landry, 1 year, $3 million to the Saints. And then second up, Melvin Gordon, 1 year, $2.5 million to the Broncos. Which of those two is more intriguing to you?
One of these makes me super, super excited. One of them makes me want to throw up. Guess.
You're really excited for Jarvis Landry and you want to throw up because of Melvin Gordon.
Yes, absolutely, Kevin. And I think you probably feel the same. But Jarvis Landry gets to go down to the New Orleans Saints, where Kingmaker, wide receiver Kingmaker, Jameis Winston's going to be throwing the football around. I mean, you look at the laundry list of players that he's elevated. Mike Evans was a nobody. Jameis Winston elevated.
Oh my God, and slow down.
There were so many touchdowns. Chris Godwin, we wouldn't know his name without Jameis Winston. Look at the nobodies on the Saints last year. I mean, I don't remember any of their names actually, but I'm sure they were good with Jameis. I'm actually really excited about this. I'm not excited about the Saints as a whole. I think Dennis Allen's probably just a one-year flame out till they can find a better option. But everyone knows that Jameis is going to fling that football around. And, you know, Jarvis Landry, he's never been a guy that you're going to draft super high. So you want to still scoop up a nice, valuable potential flex fill-in for a week. You know, it might be valuable as if you're in a three wide receiver league as that third receiver. Probably catch 5-6 passes a week, 60-70 yards, might get you in the end zone. But I do like that one. Melvin Gordon, it just makes me so sad for Javonte Williams.
Yeah, it makes me really sad for Javonte Williams as well. I think I had Javonte squarely in the top five of my running backs until that signing. I still think Javonte's going to be the lead one with Melvin Gordon coming in. As a far second, you look at Melvin Gordon's contract difference last year to this year, $8 million versus $2.5 million. Money speaks. Brought him back with a lot less money. I think, you know, probably 65% Javonte, 25% Melvin Gordon, and sprinkle in a little Mike Boone there as well.
Yeah, and you wonder how much Packers like this Broncos offense is going to be. Nathaniel Hackett, the new coach, former OC of the Packers. We saw last year quite the split from Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon. So is it going to be similar where there's almost a 50-50 split? You mentioned 65-35. Probably I would say that's fair. But I think people need to not overlook Melvin Gordon as a person they can just throw away. He might get some valuable touches in what should be a pretty dang good offense.
Yeah, and you never hope a guy goes down, but if Javonte goes down, I think Melvin Gordon pops up, you know, into that back end RB1 territory. So I think he's definitely should be valued as one of the more valuable handcuffs, and I'm not sure that come draft time he's going to be.
Yeah, we'll do a kinky handcuffs segment later this year. Sexiest, hottest. Hottest handcuffs, fuzzy pink ones, number one. Kevin, let's stop talking about handcuffs and let's go to our next segment. Rookie landing spots. These are just high, kind of either high draft picks or people that we talked about pre-draft that we like, or bad landing spots potentially. So let's kick it off with quarterbacks, Kevin. Kenny Pickett lands with the Steelers, the only quarterback selected in rounds one or two. Were you surprised about him being the first and only in the first round? And how do you think he's going to fit with the Steelers?
Yeah, I was definitely shocked that he was the only quarterback to go in round one. This is actually the latest since like 1990 that the second quarterback has ever been taken in the draft. So there's a deep pull for you. He lands with the Steelers. I don't think that he's going to get thrown in there right away. I think it's Trubisky's job first. You know, Dynasty, if you're a Kenny Pickett fan, go for him. But I've been out on Kenny Pickett for a while, so I'm not intrigued.
Yeah, Kevin, you have something. What do you have against Kenny Pickett?
The little hands.
Yeah, I guess.
That's why he wears the gloves. Has anybody... Nobody's brought that up, but that has to be why he wears the gloves.
Well, Teddy didn't have small hands, and he wore the
gloves. No, but, I mean, Teddy was Teddy two gloves.
True. Yeah, Norv Turner told him to keep those gloves on, young man. You're going to be a good one someday. You know, you don't really like Kenny Pickett. Ryan Tannehill really doesn't like Malik Willis, but I'm pretty excited about Malik Willis on the Titans. I actually think that Tannehill's in kind of a lame duck year. Huge albatross contract. He's actually the highest paid quarterback in the NFL right now, which is just ridiculous to say. And, you know, as a Vikings fan, Kirk Cousins is now third. So, you know, he's...
we can back off a little bit.
Back it off. But I think we might see Malik Willis for a few games at the tail end of this year if Ryan Tannehill and the Titans aren't in playoff position.
Yeah, and I think not only in that situation, but you could see some Trey Lance type packages where he's brought in goal line situations. Not going to be fantasy viable, but I think you'll get a sneak peek at Malik Willis this year. And if he does get that starting job later in the year, he's somebody with such high rushing upside that he's an automatic pickup. I think regardless of your situation.
Yeah, name we talked about earlier, Jalen Hurts, same kind of situation, wasn't drafted to be this surefire starter, I don't really think, but just an extreme rushing upside, has a cannon, obviously started a lot of games, can run an offense. So,
and as soon as Jalen Hurts was the starting quarterback, he was fantasy viable. Just yeah. Straight off the rushing upside. He could throw the ball as shittily as he needed to and still...
And he did, Kevin.
And he did. I mean, he was still fantasy viable.
Let's talk about some other guys who run the football, and that's the running backs. Iowa State Cyclone Breece Hall lands on the Jets, and Kevin, I'm crushed.
Did I not call that?
I'm crushed. I am heartbroken. I have to rethink my whole 2022 draft strategy because I was all over Michael Carter, and this just crushes his value.
Yeah, Breece Hall was taken in the second, so he doesn't quite carry the automatic workhorse that a first-round running back role takes, but I think that might be more the NFL evolving than anything else. I think Breece Hall is the number one, and Michael Carter is not 1B, but squarely second. I am all over Breece Hall. I think that offense will be better. Yeah, I think it's a great spot for him.
Yeah, it's probably an ideal fit. We saw Michael Carter was fantasy relevant there when he was healthy. I don't think Robert Saleh is going to say, you know, we have to have some two-headed backfield. I know that's where a lot of the NFL teams are going, but you don't draft Breece Hall, a young stud running back, and have him on the bench for half the game. So he's going to play a lot. They drafted him as a three down back. I imagine Michael Carter will mix in on multiple third down packages, but it's going to be the Breece Hall show. Interested to see if he cracks your top 10 in running backs later, Kevin. I haven't looked at it yet. I want a fresh eyes. The next guy, Kenneth Walker. This is a guy, Kevin, you were kind of excited about during the college football season. It seems like he kind of had a so-so draft combine and you know, all that stuff. Where are you at? Where are you sitting at with Kenneth Walker landing on the Seahawks?
Yeah, Kenneth Walker's landing spot, I think a lot of people are getting really excited about, but I'm not quite as excited. I think he did not show the pass catching ability at Michigan State. A lot of people say, well, he wasn't asked to. I still think Rashad Penny and Kenneth Walker are going to split this almost 50-50 right down the middle and spoil both pots, unfortunately. He's probably the best between the lines runner in the class, but I think without receiving upside, I'm reserving, you know, a late pick for him if he's there, but he's probably going to be off the board way higher than he should be.
And I think something that's not talked about lately, and this is where we kind of, where I'm going to get back from fantasy a little bit and just NFL talk. There's a reason why the Seahawks didn't go after Baker Mayfield, didn't go after Jimmy Garoppolo. I think they are positioning themselves to have not that great of a season, to be in a nice spot for next year's draft, which is loaded with quarterbacks. Mel Kiper had, I think, six of them in his first round. Todd McShay has a lot of them highly valued. This is a Seahawks team where a lot of older assets have moved on. Younger team, DK Metcalf, is apparently no-showing already. We're going to see Drew Lock or potentially Geno Smith be this team's starting quarterback. And like you said, you know, Rashad Penny is there. Chris Carson is still on the team, Kevin. So we know Pete Carroll loves Chris Carson. and Rashad Penny is stuck even through all the injuries. There's just not much upside. Maybe, I don't know, 75, 100 touches max for Kenneth Walker.
That's probably it.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah, the guy that might see some more more touches his way and potentially win the starting job, I think, is James Cook over in Buffalo. Of course, Devin Singletary is kind of won over the job late in the season and into the playoffs. But do you think James Cook is going to make a run at him?
Yeah, the Bills never fully have committed to any running back throughout the Josh Allen tenure. And this is a guy who Dalvin Cook's younger brother, kind of a smaller version of him, very similar, you know, play style where he's shifty, catch passes. He's not going to, you know, break a lot of tackles like Dalvin, but this is a guy who I think in a high flying Bills offense, we still don't really know what it's going to be like without Dabble there. But, you know, I'm super interested in a guy that could catch 50 some passes from Josh Allen, where we have Gabe Davis, Stephon Diggs taking the top off. And, you know, James Cook can be that kind of midfield target with Cole Beasley gone.
Yeah, I definitely see that as a possibility. And I think he's a talented runner, and I could potentially see him winning the starting job. When it comes to draft time, though, if he and Singletary are drafted at about the same range, I'm going to take Singletary. I'm going to take the veteran back over the rookie. But if there's a sizable gap, I'm happy to pick up James Cook late.
Yeah, we'll know during draft time, Kevin, who's been reading training camp updates, because I'm sure James Cook is going to impress at training camp. and so, you know, this is where you might see, oh, the rookie's looking fast, he's looking good at training camp, and then season rolls around and it's the veteran who's getting the work. And so, yeah, you got to be wary of, he's not a high round pick. They're not going to force him onto the field if he's not picking stuff up. And you know, the big thing for these rookie running backs, can they pass protect? They are not going to throw James Cook in there, even with all the receiving upside in the world, if he can't block somebody. And so that's where Devin Singletary might kind of win over that role. Pass catchers, James Cook is a pass catcher. There's also a lot of wide receivers that got drafted high this year. We had three in the top 10. Look at that transition, Kevin. I'm getting good at this shit. The first one off the board, though, I was a little surprised, thought Garrett Wilson would fly off first, but Drake London to the Falcons in what could potentially be one of the worst offenses we've seen in modern NFL history.
Yeah, they might be really bad on both sides of the ball, which can be really good news for Drake London if they're playing from behind a lot. I definitely think this was a high upside pick. I think Garrett Wilson was the safer pick. But they got Drake London, and I'm looking forward to Drake London, Kyle Pitts over the next few years once the Falcons can lock down a quarterback. Until then, cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I think call me next year when they draft C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young, and then I'm all in on Drake London. Here's the thing, Kevin. One of these guys we're about to talk about six receivers. One of these guys is going to pop and have a top 10 fantasy season. It's just been over the last 5 years, it's going to happen. Now Drake London obviously fell into one of the kind of, you know, worst QB situations, but he's going to be on the field all game. And you mentioned they're going to be down a lot most games, and that's valuable because, you know, Mariota can't throw 20 times to Kyle Pitts. Even though, you know, that'd be awesome.
He wants to, yeah.
Yeah. But Drake London's going to, yeah, you know, 7, 8, 9 targets a game, which you're just not going to find too many spots. So I'm in on that. We talked about the Jets a little bit with Breece Hall. Garrett Wilson also to the Jets in what I think is one of the more interesting wide receiver rooms with Elijah Moore, Corey Davis, and now they add Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, loaded wide receiver room. But I trust the talent here. Garrett Wilson, I think, has the talent to be that top 10 wide receiver if he gets the opportunity. The caveat is going to be opportunity. might need an injury or something to go his way. Unfortunately, it's just such a loaded wide receiver room. It's tough to know how those targets are going to get distributed.
I'll ask you this question, Kevin, and this will suss out all the angst that you're feeling about the Jets. Beginning of round five, you're looking for a receiver. Elijah Moore, Garrett Wilson, both still on the board. Who are you taking?
I'm taking Elijah Moore because I've seen it before.
Okay.
I love
Garrett. There you go, Kevin. Wilson. I just solved all your problems.
Yeah, but I'm not going to be thrilled about it. I'm going to be kicking myself probably by week two.
Well, you spend the entire draft kicking yourself after every pick, so it's not going to be.
That's not wrong. But I still consistently finish pretty high.
Oh, well. Let's go to Garrett Wilson's teammate, Chris Olave, on the Saints. I mentioned Kingmaker, Jameis Winston throwing the ball. He enters into an interesting wide receiver room as well with Michael Thomas, we think, going to play for the first time in 2 years. Jarvis Landry as well. Chris Olave, high pick. He's going to be used a lot, but I don't know how much upside is there for him.
Yeah, I think Chris Olave is that guy that's going to have a couple two touchdown weeks, a couple week winning weeks, but nobody's going to have him in the starting lineup because the other, 10 weeks of the season, he's putting up 2 for 20s or
Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, Kadarius Toney type stat lines. You think Michael Thomas, target shares suck. You think of Jarvis Landry, target shares suck. There's just not a lot left on the table. Oh, yeah, and then by the way, you have Alvin Kamara, target shares suck. There's just not a lot of targets left in the offense. I kind of think that he's going to be used as a one-trick pony, take the top off the defense, which is why I can see him having some league-winning weeks, especially with Jameis wanting to chuck it. But they're not going to be enough consistency to be playable on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, Chris Olave was the guy I was hoping would be on the board at 12 for the Vikings. They ended up trading out of the pick anyway, but yeah, just not a great situation for him. I think he's a really good player, but I think all the creativity is going to be out of this offense. We both have a lot of, now I want to make this very clear. I have a lot of football mind respect for Sean Payton. I think he's a dirtbag. I think he's a dirtbag human being, but
100%.
He's one of the more genius play callers in the NFL, of the last, 20, 30 years. And he's gone. Dennis Allen, defense guy. I really hope he doesn't try to run Alvin Kamara up the middle 20 times a game, but
he might.
We've seen crazier things. I mean, I've watched Mike Zimmer coach for 7 years. So, I've offensive innovation isn't my first name. But I'm just wary of that whole situation. He might be a nice person to stash at the end of a draft and say, okay, if Michael Thomas can't go, Jarvis Landry's old. If they run into the same situation last year where they have no pass catchers and it's just Chris Olave, that's kind of why you would draft him late.
Another guy that will likely be available quite late is Jameson Williams, who lands on the Lions. Not drafted late because of talent, but drafted late because of injury. Don't know if he's going to be there for training camp or even the first few weeks of the season. What's your take on Jameson Williams in 2022, but then going forward?
Yeah, I think if you're in Dynasty, you'd be super excited because this is another team that will be picking a quarterback early next year, potentially one of those top two guys, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud. And if they somehow can land Bryce Young, Jameson Williams will be a second round pick for me next year. They have that connection. Amon-Ra St. Brown, TJ Hockenson are there. They're not bad players, so it's not like they're going to be able to double team Jameson Williams all the time. If he can show me something when he gets healthy this year, I'm all in on Jameson Williams. I think he's going to be a good player. Unfortunately, he's on the Lions. So that means he gets to see my Vikings twice a year and get his ass locked up by Cameron.
Yeah, Hansen. I don't think so. Yeah, I'm kind of the same boat. I'm all over Jameson Williams next year in a league with IR, with an IR spot and potentially multiple IR spots. I really like even a slight reach for Jameson Williams just because they're going to want to see what they have, I think, late in the season when he's back. Know if they have to double down at wide receiver, if they have a true wide receiver one. I think he's very talented. He could have been the top wide receiver in this draft had he not got hurt. He was trending towards that spot in a lot of circles. So talent's there. As long as he recovers well, excited about him next year. And not as much this year unless you can really afford to stash him.
Yeah, keeper leagues, I think, especially the league we're in, which is a one keeper league, get that round value next year. Jameson Williams will go off the board in the late rounds. Big Ten guy, Jahan Dotson, Penn State, goes to Washington. We're seeing Terry McLaurin holding out for a new contract. Other receiver options there are slim. I think we both like Cam Sims. Curtis Samuel didn't play a lot last year, but still on the team. Is there going to be enough opportunity with Carson Wentz in the Commanders for Jahan Dotson?
If Terry McLaurin isn't there, yes. If he's not there, I was shocked at how high Jahan Dotson went. I thought he was going to slip in the draft, you know, land, you know, potentially maybe the Chiefs, land in an already contender territory. Commanders are kind of, I think this year, outside looking in, not going to be that good of an offense, going to rely on the defense. I don't really like him this year unless Terry McLaurin doesn't play.
Yeah, and, you know, the Commanders are in a spot where they pretty much have to pay him. They can't let a guy like that walk. So they're going to pay him. And where does Jahan Dotson slot in? He's kind of a similar player to McLaurin and Curtis Samuel. So I don't
and
know.
And Diami Brown.
I don't trust Carson Wentz as far as I can throw him, which is not very far at all. I think he's a very big man, and I'm a weak man, so I can't toss him very far. So that means I don't trust him very much. But this next guy, Kevin, if I had to bet any money on any of the guys we talked about, wide receivers finishing in the top 10, it's this guy, and he got picked 18th overall to the Titans. That's Treylon Burks. He was one of my top guys. He was one of your top guys. And I think he lands in a really nice spot.
Yeah, I don't know if he could have dreamt up a better spot besides the Titans trading away AJ Brown and him landing on the Titans. That is the creme de la creme, the best spot. He has the opportunity to get force fed from wherever he wants to line up. Whether it be the slot, like you did in Arkansas quite a bit, or the outside, I think he's an all-out buy. The worst part about this is because he's potentially the wide receiver one, he's probably going to get drafted pretty high, and that just makes me sick to my stomach. I wanted all of Treylon Burks this year. Probably not going to be able to get him when I'm comparing other wide receivers drafted in the same spot, but, man, in a keeper league, I still might draft him way too high just so I can have him next year.
Yeah, this is one of those pure upside plays where, you know, we mentioned the roadblocks for Garrett Wilson in New York. We mentioned the roadblocks for Chris Olave in New Orleans. Jameson Williams might not play for a while. And you start looking down the list. Well, like I said, one of these guys has to pop. Treylon Burks is kind of that most likely, because he's, like you said, could potentially get force-fed. I think we both have a lot of respect for Bobby Trees, but he's not the player that Treylon Burks is, and I think we'll see that pretty early. I think Treylon Burks has a potential to pop. Last guy here, last rookie landing spot, Kevin. Well, last one of the list that we made, but... That's called great podcasting, folks. Brought to you by Logan Mo. I'm Mo and McGee on Fantasy. Trey McBride, tight end one. We mentioned him in our pre-draft talk. Lands with the Cardinals. That just terrible landing spot for him.
Yeah, he's going to be stuck behind Zach Ertz this year. I think this is the Zach Ertz phase out plan. You're going to see none of Trey McBride this year. We might talk about him next year. No tight ends were picked in the top 10 this year. That's very different from seeing, you know, Fant, Hockenson, and Kyle Pitts over the last few years. And I think with this, with him getting picked in the late second, it's very telling that there was just no supreme rookie tight end candidates. So look around to guys that you're familiar with from last year, because I'm not sure that there's a go-to rookie this year.
Yeah, rookie tight ends always kind of struggle as well. And then when you start looking at the Cardinals, the pecking order, it's gonna take you a while before you get to Trey McBride. So you got Kyler Murray rushing, him throwing to DeAndre Hopkins, him throwing to Hollywood Brown, him throwing to Rondale Moore, him throwing to Zach Ertz, Kyler Murray passing it to himself, Eno Benjamin, James Conner, and then Trey McBride might slot in.
Yeah, there's a couple hurdles for him.
Well, a couple guys that we didn't list, so these are people that weren't high picks. These were our most intriguing landing spots that we didn't just kind of talk about. Those were kind of high round or high valued prospects. These are not, Kevin. Who are you pulling from the trash heap and potentially taking at the end of drafts this year?
Yeah, at the end of drafts, I am targeting all of David Bell. Every draft I'm in, I want David Bell. And I bit my lip when we were talking about Jarvis Landry, because all that I really care about the Jarvis Landry signing was that it wasn't on the Browns. I think David Bell has the opportunity to get force fed. He's sitting right next to made of glass Amari Cooper. And he has the potential to take over immediately the Jarvis Landry role and see potentially 10 targets per game. And by the way, if somehow Deshaun Watson doesn't get suspended for the entire season, he'll have a really good quarterback throwing to him. Or it'll be Jacoby Brissett.
Hey, Jacoby Brissett's not bad either. I mean, the guy played at Purdue for 4 years, so he hasn't been exactly getting the best signal callers in the world. There's only one thing that could make me more excited is that if David Bell was playing the Iowa Hawkeyes every week, he'd be the number one overall pick. I think he averaged like 200 yards and 3 touchdowns against the Iowa Hawkeyes. But yeah, this is a great one for me too. Cleveland's been looking for pass catchers for years. They've tried it. Donovan Peoples-Jones, we thought was going to be great last year, wasn't. They trade for Amari Cooper. He's obviously been the number one guy, but there's plenty of opportunity there for David Bell to slide in at that number two spot. My guy, Kevin, is a running back. That's Tyler Allgeier out of BYU. Yeah, that's right. That's right, Kevin. You might not have heard that name before.
Tyler Allgeier. Oh, I've heard of the name.
Oh, well. Anyway, from BYU, had a great year last year. He rushed for over 190 yards in multiple games, I think 4 or 5. The guy can run the football. You start to think about where he landed in Atlanta. Yes, you mentioned they might be down a lot. Cordell Patterson is still there. Cordell Patterson is not a running back. We saw him play that role last year, but they still tried to get Mike Davis in there at the beginning of the year. They tried the Mike Davis experiment. It didn't work. I think it will work with Tyler Allgeier, and I think he's going to be a guy who you can get for free at end of drafts and could potentially, I'm not going to promise this to anybody, but could potentially pay off in an Alvin Kamara-like situation where you're getting a player for free that you could start in your RB2 spot.
I'm not going to argue with you that he could take over the RB1 spot over in Atlanta, especially if Cordarrelle Patterson is used a little bit more in the outside. That being said, I don't want any part of the Atlanta Falcons running game. And that being said, he was a day 3 pick, which, yes, you can point to a few of the exceptions. Your Philip Lindsay's going undrafted. I think Kamara was still a day two pick even. So generally day three isn't a good sign. They also have Damian Williams back there. So even if he does take over RB1, he's still probably going to be splitting with Damian Williams or, dare I say, Quandre Allison. If you're getting him for free, it's maybe not a bad wait and see, but I'm not getting any more excited than a wait and see.
Kevin, and that's why I'm a better fantasy player than you, because I tap into upside that you just don't see.
It's better eyes. Your glasses are stronger prescription than my contacts, I think.
There you go. I'm super excited about this next segment, Kevin. We're going to talk about 40 NFL football players. We're going to give out some top 10 lists. I got my QB list. You did running backs, tight ends. I also did my favorite position, wide receivers. There's going to be some surprises. And Kevin, how do you want to do this? I'm just going to give you my top 10 and then you just take Quake or what?
Here, how about I'll start reading down your list and I'm sure some questions will pop up.
Okay. Here we go.
So at the top quarterback spot, consensus with everybody else, Josh Allen. Tough to not take him there. Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, pretty chalky start. Kyler Murray at the four spot. Out of those top four, which of those do you see underperforming your projection? If you had to pick one, who's the riskiest?
Kyler Murray. We've seen the hot starts, the fades. Can Kyler Murray put together a full season? He just got a new, brand new shiny toy in Hollywood Brown. Is this the year that he fully puts the rushing and passing through a whole season? I think this kind of ends the list, 1 through 4, of guys I truly believe could be QB1 at the end of the year. So I kind of tiered it. I would say, these top four guys are my tier one, if I would say that. Obviously, I'm taking Josh Allen probably a couple of rounds before I would take Kyler Murray, but I would be just fine. I would be very content if I had Kyler Murray going into the season.
So Allen number one, Herbert number two, Mahomes three, Murray four. Now we get a little more controversial, I think, and your tier break makes sense. We have Hurts at five, Jalen Hurts of the Philadelphia Eagles at five, Tom Brady at six, and Dak Prescott at seven.
So there's actually another little tier break in there, Kevin. You just don't mess with my tiers.
I'm sorry, man. You got to put a bold line.
Yeah, I should have. 5 and 6 are my second tier. Jalen Hurts, Tom Brady, guys that have higher upside than the 5th and 6th quarterbacks. I'm a little worried about Tom Brady with Bruce Arians now out of the coaching staff. Is it going to be as high flying as it was with Todd Bowles as the head coach? We've seen him. I'm just scared about all defensive coaches being very run oriented. And hey, let's take some time off the clock. Let's let my defense get a quick breath instead of the quick strike Tom Brady that we've seen the last few years. But Jalen Hurts and Tom Brady are kind of that second tier guys that we've seen it from before, guys that I'm pretty confident are not going to get injured and shipwreck your quarterback position.
I think that's fair. I think that makes sense. But what's not making sense here, I see Dak Prescott at seven, and then I think this is a mistake, Lamar Jackson at eight.
Lamar Jackson at eight. Yes, Kevin. I put Dak Prescott and Lamar Jackson in that tier three. So I did four tiers in my top 10. Now, if you want a full tier ranking, that's going to be another episode of Mo and McGee. You had to come back for that kind of juicy stuff.
That's the paywall out in front of you.
Yeah, that's our OnlyFans content, along with Kevin nipple picks.
Which who wouldn't pay a boatload for that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would pay a lot. I'm actually staring at him right now. Folks that don't see the podcast, Kevin goes fully naked while we're recording. Luckily,
it's the only way I'm comfortable.
But Dak Prescott and Lamar Jackson fall 7 and 8 because I have very little confidence that they're going to start 17 games. Lamar Jackson, yes, absolutely has dominated past seasons. But look at the receiving weapons, not anything to write home about. Their rushing is going to be there for sure. But do I want to rely on a rushing quarterback for all 17 games? I just think he's going to go way higher than I want to take him. And so that's why I have him down on my list. I'm just not confident in the 17 game ability of Lamar Jackson.
Bad take.
Well, bad and take. Also, Kevin, you know, at some point, John Harbaugh is going to be like, hey, Lamar, like, we need you 17 games throwing the football. Stop running. Now the rushing upside goes down a little bit. So, you know, it's already kind of happened through his NFL career. He didn't run as much last year as he did previous years. I'm just, you know, a little cautious.
Lamar Jackson, first year starting, 27 points per game. Second year, 22. Third year, 22. So at 22, he's going to finish better than QB8. And I understand the concerns about the receiving corps, but you think back to those early years, who is he throwing to besides Mark Andrews? I can't remember.
Steve Smith.
I think he missed Steve Smith. See, so I don't think that the receiving core is much of an issue for me. Lamar Jackson, I have him at number two in my rankings. Again, you're going to have to pay for the OnlyFans in order to see my QB rankings. But we have a sharp divide there.
All right. So wrapping up my list, Kevin, I got two other guys. Aaron Rodgers, Joe Burrow, the not sexy but can get the job done tier. You know, Rodgers, MVP, he's going to be a QB1 at the end of the year. Joe Burrow, I don't think he has the rushing upside that the guys above him do. So that's why he stays kind of lower. But I still think he's going to pass for 300 yards, a couple touchdowns a game. He's going to be just fine in your QB1 slot.
Yeah. Only other names that I wanted to throw out there that I know kind of fall in the consensus top 10, didn't fall in yours. Russell Wilson and Matthew Stafford. All out on those, or are those the next two on the list?
That's 11, 12. If I had to, you know, once again, you're just kind of blowing my OnlyFans content because I was going to do a little, hey, you guys want to see 11, 12 on my list? Get a little sexy with it. But no, they would be 11, 12. I like Russell Wilson, but, you know, Nathaniel Hackett has never called plays before. So I'm just a little worried there in a new system, new place. I'm just not going to all out trust him. All the guys above him have been on their teams multiple years, have shown fantasy success multiple years. I just can't elevate him without seeing it first. And Matt Stafford, even with the great, you know, season that he had last year, he wasn't that high of a fantasy quarterback. Very, you know, I don't want to throw this name out there, because he's kind of my sleeper, but Kirk Cousins, he's very Kirk Cousins-esque, where he's going to have a nice game, but zero rushing upside with Matt Stafford. He's going to get you very Joe Burrow-esque, 300 yards, couple touchdowns a game. And that's just not a weak winning upside, where Josh Allen, Justin Herbert might rush for two touchdowns a game. Kyler Murray might rush for 75 yards in a game. Just, you know, not that much upside. So that's well, my so list, Kevin.
That's the bona fide top 10 Logan Moe list, and I will shut up about it.
All right. You know, Kevin, as I'm taking my first glance at your running back list, you know, throw the consensus rankings out the board. Kevin has his own damn mind. You're not going to tell him what to do. But this first one, this is just a homer chalk loser pick. He has Christian McCaffrey number one. Explain yourself, Kevin. The guy has not been healthy for two straight years.
Yeah. But when he plays, it's 25 points in the bank. Forget about it. You're going to see the Carolina offense shift from the Joe Brady offense to McAdoo. And you're going to see him running more in between the tackles. Where did he get hurt each of the last two seasons? A swing to the right side, a sweep to the left, a lot of outside runs. I think they're very fluky. He took some advice from Marshall Faulk, which apparently he's refusing to share with the rest of the world. So I put all my confidence in Christian McCaffrey. Yes, injuries are going to be some kind of a concern, but running backs typically only play 14, 15 games, and I think he'll be more at that level instead of missing large chunks of the season this year. When he plays, there's nobody that you can draft ahead of him because his median is other people's ceilings.
So if you land the number one pick again, like you did last year in a few drafts, you're taking McCaffrey.
Yeah, to the bank. No doubt about it. You can lock it in right now.
Okay, I don't believe you did tiers, but let's go 2-3 here. You have Jonathan Taylor 2, Derrick Henry 3.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor 2, he's most other people's consensus number 1 for good reason, because his floor was so high, ceiling is also there. Don't see that offense changing too much with the addition of Matt Ryan. I think it's still going to be very run-focused. He toted the ball a lot last year. He might get hurt. I don't know. We'll see. Derrick Henry, similar story to Christian McCaffrey. When he plays, he's one of the best two running backs in football. And before he got hurt last season, I think it was 27 points per game in PPR, which, again, weak winning territory. You're in those first two rounds, you're buying high upside. And Derrick Henry, ceiling doesn't get much higher besides Christian McCaffrey.
One thing I'm worried about with Derrick Henry and why I would not have had him as high as you did. He's 28 years old. Not since the 2017 season has a running back over 27 finished in the top six in fantasy football. Running backs, that is. Coming off injury, 28 years old, a lot of wear on the tires, very nervous. And you, there's a theme here, Kevin. I want to have the least risk as possible. Derrick Henry, Christian McCaffrey, risk. A lot of risk there. I don't know if I'm taking a lot of risk selecting Jonathan Taylor. So that's just why I would probably have him over the other two guys and why I would probably bury Derrick Henry a little further down the list.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. But in those first two rounds, I think you really have to shoot for ceilings. So I'm drafting based on ceilings in those first couple rounds. And that's why the
pussy, Kevin?
No. Yeah, I did, actually. Wait a minute. I did call you a pussy. It was just under my breath. You have to shoot for ceilings. And like I said, Derrick Henry, no higher ceiling. If he gets hurt, he gets hurt. But the good part about when a player does get hurt, especially earlier in the season, is you have time to fill in, you know, the cracks a little bit, find those guys off the waiver wire to fill in a little bit. When you get into the playoffs, you need to make sure you have the high upside guys. You've taken your shots on the high upside guys.
All right, I'm going to do another two here because I want to roast you on number six. But numbers 4 and 5, so 4 Austin Eckler, 5 Joe Mixon. I agree with those guys. Joe Mixon is in an awesome offense with a new offensive line, 3 great receivers, a great quarterback. There's not much better a spot for him. And Austin Eckler, we've seen, is just, you know, him and Justin Herbert have a great connection.
Yeah, the theme there is clear wide receiver or clear RB1s in really great offenses.
All right, Kevin, this is where you got to explain yourself here. At number 6, you have Leonard Fournette.
Yes, I do have Leonard Fournette at number 6. That's up from consensus 10. And reason being, Leonard Fournette in total points last season finished RB6. When you look at points per game, RB4. And I talked about the theme of the last two being clear RB1s in great offenses. I'm not out on the Bucs offense yet. I think it's still going to be a great offense. He's going to be the goal line carrier. Maybe he doesn't catch quite as many passes, but he's going to get touchdowns in an offense that scores a fuck ton of touchdowns.
That's true. I just have a hard time elevating him above these next four guys on your list. You have Dalvin Cook, which, you know, I think you just did this to spite me. You bury Dalvin Cook at number seven, one of the best running backs in the league. Cook seven, Najee Harris eight, another interesting one, a guy who had a great rookie year, should be ascending. Injury bug city, Saquon Barkley at nine, and then DeAndre Swift, a guy I think a lot of people are all over at 10.
Yeah, Cook and Harris are graded a little bit lower than consensus for me because of separate reasons. Dalvin Cook, another year older, and that offense, I think, is going to look quite a bit different. I think O'Connell's going to want to push the ball a little bit more. One thing that made Dalvin Cook really, really solid was when the Vikes got inside the five, you're going to see Dalvin Cook touch the ball at least once. I don't know that that's going to be the case again this year. Might catch some more passes, which would be good. But I don't know the offense is going to be as good as the Bengals, Chargers, or Bucks, which is where why I slot him at seven.
I got to ask you, so you're about to talk about Najee Harris. After Najee Harris, is that where your kind of RB1 break is? Or do you feel like all 10 of these guys are like your surefire RB1s?
I feel really confident about Fournette on up being wide receiver, being RB1s, locks.
So Cook, Harris, Barkley, Swift, you have some reservations.
Yeah. I think Najee Harris is going to be really safe. I have a tough time believing that he will finish outside of the top 12 running backs, but that offense, I think, is going to be very, very bad. It's going to be, you know, kind of telltale Najee Harris run on first, run on second, and then try to make it up on third. And he'll get plenty of touches, which makes him nice and safe, but I don't see the upside being there of him being on a good enough offense to score enough times. That's my main concern with Najee. Saquon,
DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, Saquon at nine, up quite a bit from the consensus rankings at 14. Again, looking at ceilings, I think Saquon has shown that he can catch 10 and go for 100, and then dunk in a couple rushing touchdowns on top of that. Offense hopefully will be a little bit better. But when he's healthy, he has a ceiling unlike many others. And I think that makes him worthy of a top 10 ranking.
So, you ran out the list with DeAndre Swift. Three guys that you kind of left off that were, you know, up there in consensus were Alvin Kamara, Aaron Jones, Nick Chubb. Out of those three guys, I like Nick Chubb the most. Is there a reason why you picked Saquon over those kind of safer options?
Who'd you list besides Nick Chubb? I'm sorry.
Kamara, Aaron Jones, Nick Chubb.
Yeah. Kamara suspension. Aaron Jones timeshare, Nick Chubb timeshare. Those are the best two timeshare running backs for sure, and that's why they follow up closely behind this top 10. But your ceiling gets capped a little bit when you're not getting every goal line touch, when you're not getting, you know, the 25 touches per game that some of these other guys are getting. That's what cools me on them. Kamara would easily be in the top 10, but I'm guessing that he's going to miss at least six games. Maybe not at least, probably exactly six.
Yeah, it's too bad all these really nice stand-up guys in the NFL, Deshaun Watson, Kamara, Calvin Ridley. That was a nasty commissioner to put them out of the game.
Yeah, geez, cancel culture. Apparently, you can't just be a shitty person.
Terrible.
Let's keep it moving on the wide receiver list. You rank the wide receivers. To nobody's surprise, Justin Jefferson's number one. Is it straight homerism, or is it justified in some way?
I think if you looked on any list anywhere, he's in the top two.
Yes.
Here's why I put him over Cooper Kupp, who I have at number two. So Justin Jefferson, Cooper Kupp. There's just no chance that Cooper Kupp has as good of a season as he did. I think he's going to be really good. I think he's pretty much a slam dunk top five if he stays healthy. But we saw him have an absolutely historic touchdown year. The touchdown rate is just highly unsustainable. Now, Justin Jefferson enters into, like you mentioned with Dalvin Cook, a Kevin O'Connell offense going to be very Ram-like. I don't think it's going to be exactly like the Rams. I think it will be different. They will use running backs more. They will throw the tight end more. And Adam Thielen is still alive and still a good wide receiver too. But I and this might be where homerism kicks in a little bit. I do think he's arguably the most talented receiver in the NFL. Just he can do everything, great routes, short passes, can jump over people, can run by people. You read down the rest of this list. He has their talent and then maybe an extra gear as well. So this is only year three for him. We're not even entering Justin Jefferson's prime yet. And, you know, we're potentially witnessing, I don't want to say it, Kevin, but one of the greatest receivers in NFL history just blossoming in front of our eyes.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to puke.
I
have to stop you. So Cooper Kupp, 25.9 points per game last year. Justin Jefferson, 19.4. That means Cooper Kupp could score one fewer touchdown every single week and still outscore Justin Jefferson. So I just think the hurdle is too high for Cooper Kupp. I agree. He probably won't replicate last season. But fuck, he had such a good season. And even if you walk it back a long way, he's still ahead of Justin Jefferson.
I'm not the biggest Allen Robinson fan, but I do believe that he is more of a competition to targets than Odell Beckham or Robert Woods were for Kupp. And so that's, you know, this is like Cooper Kupp was on my team last year. He's going to be on my team this year, my main fantasy team. You're asking me to pick between my children, Kevin, you know, Justin Jefferson, you know, in a divorce, Justin Jefferson would live with me and Cooper Kupp would be just like my stepchild that comes over like once every weekend or something. But so that's why I have Justin Jefferson number one. If you're asking me to pick between those two, I'm going to pick the Viking, but I do believe they're both very similar. I think Justin Jefferson will go over 20 points per game this year. He's that good. But Cooper Kupp good as well.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to be unhappy with either of them on your team this year. So stop me when you have a tier break, but we have CeeDee Lamb at 3, Davante Adams at 4, Stephon Diggs at 5.
Stop it.
All right. Those three.
Tier break. So yeah, Justin Jefferson, Cooper Kupp. Those are your wide receiver, wide receiver ones, overall. CeeDee Lamb, I think I elevated him quite a bit. He was consensus ranked 6. I took him to 3. You lose Amari Cooper. You hopefully have a healthy Dak Prescott all year. I think we've not seen the full, CeeDee Lamb experience yet, which for me, I've always been a big CeeDee Lamb fan. When he's gotten those targets, when he's been the guy, if Amari Cooper hasn't played, he's been incredible. I'm big on Michael Gallup too this year, just because of Amari Cooper and Dak Prescott had something going on where, Dak had to give Cooper his 7-8 targets a game, even if he wasn't playing that well. So where do those 7-8 targets go? Three of them might go to CeeDee Lamb, a couple of them to Gallup. We might see Dalton Schultz have a little better year. But I'm big on CeeDee Lamb this year, ascending into that true like wide receiver one in fantasy.
Yeah, I wanted to put CeeDee Lamb ahead of Davante Adams, but I'm right there with you. Gallup's going to miss the first part of the season, and I think CeeDee's going to get absolutely fed. Even when Gallup gets back, I think he's going to be money.
Yeah, there's kind of the only thing that worries me about Davante Adams is you had a Hall of Famer, one of the best quarterbacks of all time, locking in on him all game. He's entering a much better offense. Well, not better offense, more talented offense with Darren Waller. Hunter Renfro is still going to get his. He just got paid. So that's the only thing that worries me about Davante Adams. He's going to be really good, Kevin. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm super excited that he's not on the Packers anymore because he actually torched my Vikes. I don't want to put him at one and have egg on my face when there's a little bit of an adjustment period there. Stephon Diggs. The one thing about Stephon Diggs, I've had him these last few years when he's been on the Bills. He's money in the bank, 16, 17 points. The problem with Stephon Diggs is he doesn't have those blow up 30 point games. Why is that? He just doesn't have that touchdown upside as the guys above him on the list. He just, you know, when he gets into that red zone, that's Josh Allen running territory. He looks for Dawson Knox, Gabe Davis in that territory. And, you know, Stephon Diggs between the 20s is as good as it gets. But when you're looking to draft a receiver in the first round, you want a guy who's going to score 10 to 12 touchdowns.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Definitely. I mean, he still scored 10 touchdowns last year, but it seemed to always be in those weeks where he also had, you know, lower receiving numbers those weeks, and you just never saw a really true high ceiling. And there's so much to go around with that Bills offense looking better and better every year. So I think I know where I think I know exactly where the next tier break is. So we have those first five. Now we have Ja'Marr Chase at 6, Tyreek Hill at 7, and Mike Evans at 8.
So Ja'Marr Chase and Tyreek Hill, kind of similar profiles where they might not catch 100 passes, but if they catch 70, you're good because they're going to take, you know, 6 or 7 of them housed and win you your week. And Ja'Marr Chase, you saw last year, had multiple week winning games. The thing that worries me about both of them and Mike Evans is there's kind of a true wide receiver 2 that's running next to them. Ja'Marr Chase, you have T. Higgins, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, who I think is going to be really good. Mike Evans has Chris Godwin. These guys are all money in the bank. They're going to finish in the top 12. Mike Evans going to catch, you know, 1,000 yards worth of passes, 12 touchdowns. Tyreek Hill is going to have those massive, massive games. Ja'Marr Chase is going to have those massive, massive games. They just don't have that week-to-week consistency that those guys above them do, and that's why a tier break.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially on Ja'Marr Chase. He's a guy that made so much of his living last year on, you know, really big weeks, really big plays. Can he replicate it? Probably, but, you know, that's always going to be a question on a week-to-week basis. Is it going to be a huge game, or is it going to be, you know, he barely holds his own in your starting lineup. At the same time, I mean, he could be the wide receiver 1 if what he showed last year in stretches is what we see throughout the season. So I really like your ranking at 6. I think that's a good spot. Tyreek Hill.
Safe, Kevin.
Tyreek Hill, I just don't know that Tua is going to throw enough to keep Waddle and Hill afloat. So you have him right at 7, which is consensus. Right at consensus, but I don't know. I'm not quite there with you. Rounding out your top 10, we have a couple real deviations from consensus rankings. You have Michael Pittman at 9, consensus 14, and Jerry Jeudy at number 10, consensus 24. Wow, what a jump.
Yeah, we'll start with Michael Pittman. He gets Matt Ryan in at quarterback, and that's just such an upgrade. I think it's, you know, apart from Deshaun Watson, if he plays going to the Browns, I think Matt Ryan's the biggest quarterback upgrade any team made this year. It kind of reminds me of a little bit of like Matt Stafford going to the Rams. You know, the Colts are not going to be as explosive, but Frank Reich is a great coach. I think he's, you know, a top coach. And Michael Pittman, we saw with Carson Wentz, had some dominant outings and just didn't really have the connection with Carson Wentz because Carson Wentz is dog water. But he had some great games, and I think he's only ascending. This is year three for Michael Pittman. And you look at that wide receiver room, there's not much else to like. Kind of worries me a little bit. Might get double teamed if he starts having some early season success. But hopefully someone out of the Paris Campbell, Alec Pierce, Jack Doyle, Mo Alie-Cox situation helps out a little bit. But I'm big on Michael Pittman.
I'm with you there. I think Michael Pittman's another guy that I think 14 consensus is way too low. I also have him in my top 10.
Jerry Jeudy, I put in there because I was looking at the consensus ranks, and I just, you know, I went through each one. Does my gut say that they're a top 10 fantasy? It was like, maybe. And so then I kind of jumbled all those maybes up, and I was like, who do I think has not shown it, but has that potential to be even higher than number 10? And that's Jerry Jeudy. Gets a great quarterback, Hall of Fame quarterback this year. That's a pretty big upgrade as well, from going from him to Teddy, or from Teddy to Russell Wilson. But Jerry Jeudy, we haven't seen it. He's shown it in flashes, wasn't healthy last year. We've seen Russell Wilson support multiple wide receivers. That's why Cortland Sutton doesn't scare me off as a secondary threat. I really, really like Jerry Jeudy this year, and I think he can be a guy that can be had later in drafts that has huge potential.
Yeah, maybe one of the best route runners in the league, and we just haven't seen a quarterback that can take advantage of it. And I think Russ is exactly what he needs. His range of outcomes, Jerry Jeudy, I think is, I could conceivably see him a top five wide receiver this year. I could conceivably see if, you know, KJ Hamler pushes him out of the slot over to the outside, you know, maybe he's closer to that 24 mark, but I think 24 is way too low. I think, while I don't have him in the top 10, I have him very close.
Yeah. All right, Kevin, that's the wide receiver list. I'm sticking to my guns. I think my two lists right now better than your running back list for sure.
Not a shot.
Let's see if you can catch up with your tight end list. I see some clear tiers here. I know you didn't do tiers, but let's start out with the top three. You have Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, Kyle Pitts. You still believe in Travis Kelce as the number one tight end?
Yeah. And Tyreek leaving, I think, only helps that cause. 2 years ago, you saw, you know, a lot of those touchdowns in the red zone going to Tyreek's way. Travis Kelce now has to compete with Juju for those same touches. I think that he will get the ball one way or another. He's squarely my number one. Mark Andrews is right behind him at number two. Those are the only two tight ends that I can see conceivably going, you know, 10 for 102. Kyle Pitts right there on the doorstep, just a shitty offense. But I would put him third behind those first two.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't see any disagreement there. I think Mark Andrews and Travis Kelce are those clear top two. You know, Kyle Pitts, I'd throw in there. Like, if you're drafting in the third round, you need a tight end, you want an early, you want a surefire, really good tight end. That's kind of probably where I would put that break in, right after Kyle Pitts. And then these next few guys, I would maybe pause if you're drafting them in the third round. That's George Kittle 4, Darren Waller 5, TJ Hockenson 6.
Yeah, these guys all carry at least some question mark, I think. George Kittle, I hate downgrading players because they might get hurt, but George Kittle, I think, is a special case because of the way he plays. He just puts himself in situations where he can get hurt and more frequent situations than some of these other guys. When he's on the field, he's shown that he can put up those 30 point weeks, but there's enough of a question mark to push him out of that top tier. Darren Waller and TJ Hockenson, great options, but what are those offenses going to look like? How are they going to get divvied up? So my top six go right down with consensus ranks, and it's because I have a tough time poking holes in that argument. Yeah, just kind of as you go down that list, more and more question marks start to pop up.
Yeah, and out of that top six, you went pretty consensus out of the top six. The one that I'm worried about the most is Darren Waller. I think a lot of his value last year was volume-based. And with Davante Adams there, I think that volume shrinks pretty considerably. I mean, you're talking about a guy in Davante Adams who's no doubt going to command 9 to 10 targets a game. That's coming right out of Darren Waller's pocket. Still going to be valuable, still going to, you know, have a lot more receiving upside than the rest of the guys on the list. It just worries me a lot without seeing, you know, Josh McDaniels is there as well. New coach. How does he value the tight end spot? We know that New England did. Is that going to follow him? So it's just, you know, like you said, questions abound.
Absolutely.
7 and 8, we have Pat Freiermuth and Dalton Schultz.
Yeah. So I think this tier, and really I would include the next two in this tier as well.
So 9 Dawson Knox, 10 Noah Fant.
Yeah, so after those top six, I really want a top six tight end this year, because I think where you start to see one or two question marks in those top six, you're seeing a bunch in any tight end after that. But between Freiermuth, Schultz, Knox, and Fant, these are all guys that I think they're talented. I think they, given, you know, the right opportunity, can push into that top six. But there's either concerns with the offense in the case of Freiermuth and Noah Fant, or there's concerns with too many mouths to feed in the offense in the case of Dalton Schultz and Dawson Knox. And less so with Schultz, which is why I have him ahead of Knox and Fant. But I don't know. I'm a little bit down on the Cowboys offense. It's what pushes them back to 8. So just kind of as you work your way down the list, more and more question marks on these guys with after that top six. It's kind of a free for all. But these are all guys that I believe have the talent to be a top 5 tight end if given the right opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, you, like you said, you could probably throw, you know, guys like Zach Ertz, Mike Gesicki, Hunter Henry, all in that tier of the Noah Fant. And it's just like, well, you're getting a guy who might catch 4 to 5 passes, might get in the end zone, whereas that top six, they are going to catch 6 passes. They are more likely to get in the end zone. And when you're talking about Kelce, Andrews, Pitts, you can throw Kittle and Waller in there as well. You're talking about guys that are probably going to average 60, 70 yards as well. These other guys are kind of touchdown dart throws, which unfortunately, that's where the tight end situation is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So if you don't get one of the top three, hopefully you get one of the next three, because after that, it's, you know, pick or choose, because it's totally a crapshoot. I mean, I even contemplated putting Evan Engram in the top 10 here, which is how bad I was reaching.
Well, so Evan Engram, Doug Peterson is always has loved the tight ends, and, you know, Evan Engram stepped into a nice situation where, you know, he might be the second best pass catcher on that team, talent wise. So super interesting. Yeah. Tight end crapshoot. Here's a question, Kevin. Do you think that tight end should now be treated more like running back, where those top six get moved up the draft board based on positional scarcity?
In the past, up until this year, I would have said no. But after looking at the stark difference in my top 10, I would definitely agree. This is the first year where I'm actively trying in the first 5 rounds to get a tight end.
Yeah, folks, I mean, heard it here first. In your drafts, tight end round 2 or 3 for sure. TJ Hockenson, end of the 2nd round.
Okay. You can't give bad fantasy advice on a fantasy football podcast or people don't come back.
Well, some of these people are in leagues that I play in, so I just want to make sure that I give them the advice that they need.
Oh, you should throw out TJ Hockenson, former Iowa Hawkeye.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, George Kittle as hit well. Those, Hawkeye. Oh, Noah Fant, Hawkeye. Yeah.
Hit those guys a couple times. Yeah.
All right, fellas, we have a very, very special guest with us today. We have Derek Hubbard, the creator of Derek's Mega Bowl, here with us. Derek, how are you doing?
Good, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good, good.
We're doing great. We can't wait to talk to you today about fantasy football because we are two guys obsessed with it. We think you are as well, so we might be three peas in a pod here. Can you just tell us what do you love about fantasy football? What got you interested? How did you get started?
Yeah, so my wife would call me an addict, unfortunately. So I guess I have a problem with fantasy football because all I do is think about it. I started back in probably seventh or eighth grade. I was a young pup when I got started. My dad got me into it. I didn't do so hot my first year. My first ever pick was Ron Dane, you know, rookie Ron Dane. You can imagine how that went. So, yeah, I've been playing ever since. I'm big into the Dynasty community. That's kind of my go-to thing. And now I've started this Derek's Mega Bowl, which we'll talk about. So fantasy football is on my mind 24/7.
Yeah, definitely for both of us as well. And, you know, like your wife, we get ridiculed by our significant others as well. So
yeah, you're definitely not alone in being called an addict. But, you know, I think that's a good lead in the Mega Bowl. What is the Mega Bowl? Tell us a little about it.
Yeah, so I kind of stole the concept from a guy named Scott Fish who does the Scott Fish Bowl. It's pretty well known around fantasy football community. I wanted to start something a little more challenging because I've done, you know, the conventional redraft leagues, the dynasty leagues, but I wanted a new challenge. So year one, we started with roughly 72 teams. Last year, I built it up to 96. This year, my goal is hopefully to have 192 teams in this league. Eventually, year to year, I would like to get up to 1,000. You know, that's my end goal someday. But what I'm trying to do is just bring a large, you know, guys like you. You know, I've never met you guys before, but bring a large community of fantasy football addicts and experts or just guys that like to play, bring them together, make it a little more challenging, compete for one title, because it's kind of rare that you play in a league with this kind of size. So, yeah, so this year, 192 teams competing for one goal. We have a bunch. It's 12-team divisions. Everybody has at stake each player. And then we go into one big tournament playoff at the end, competing for one Super Bowl.
Yeah, me and Kevin obviously just joined this last year, but man, what a blast we had. You know, like you said, it's just different. You play in those standard redraft leagues. Everyone has different players. When it gets to playoff times in the Mega Bowl, you sometimes had Tyreek Hill versus Tyreek Hill, and kind of it negates that matchup. And it was just kind of fun seeing that in the playoffs. I thought the drafting was great. And, you know, for everyone that wants to join, we obviously want you in. A great thing that Derek does is every week kind of gets that update of where everyone else is at. Me and Kevin were in different divisions. We still kind of ribbed each other every now and then when he would drop one or I would lose as well.
Yeah, so it's been a lot of fun. I've got to know quite a few people through doing this. And like you said, it's kind of fun to go in the playoffs and you might have two or three of the same guys playing each other. It's the other, you know, who knows, Jerry Jeudy or, you know, the Josh Allens in the world that you guys don't each have, you know, competing for the championship that week. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So next thing, kind of a my bad, but I didn't read the full scoring rules. So I went into the draft last year and, you know, when it gets to that time of the year, I'm all in, locked in. I have my players. I know where I'm picking them. And all of a sudden, some players started falling to me. Quarterbacks made a huge run in the second round. And I was like, oh, what am I doing? Look at the rules. 6-point quarterback touchdowns. Got to read the rules, folks. That was a classic mistake by me. But what is some other new stuff that Mega Bowl is doing this year with scoring or with new teams, things like that?
Yeah, so one thing I really try to do is listen to the people of the league, see what they want to do. This year, I sent out a league-wide vote to see what rules they wanted. I had best ball. I had, what did I have? Just a bunch of different settings. And anyways, the one that was voted on was a one quarterback, two running back, two wide receiver, three flex, tight end, and defense league with six on the bench. We've in the past have had your traditional kickers, you know, you're just your one flex spot. But I wanted to make the scoring a little bit higher because those flex spots, that's kind of where you separate yourself from the other ones. And kickers, they're boring. Let's just face it.
Yeah, get them out of here. I've been talking about that for a long time.
Yeah, kicker one versus kicker 20, you know, there's not much of a difference. So, and just so you know, we are going to bring back the 6-point touchdown for quarterbacks throwing and running. So make sure you get your it every year. The quarterbacks go early. Once one goes, you know, the run's going to start. So, yeah. So one thing I'm definitely trying to do from year to year is just ask what everybody wants to do. You know, if it's a super flex best ball, just kind of change it up because everybody kind of gets in that rut of doing the same thing over and over and over. So, and I've never played in a league, you know, with three flex spots like this before. So this is going to be new to me, just like probably most people.
Yeah, three flex and six bench. These rosters are going to be nice and deep, and I can't wait to be rostering the next guy up and pull it over everybody else.
For mock draft so far, and yeah, who's filling up your last flex spot? It's kind of brutal.
That's okay. So I want to know, what's your favorite part of running Derek's Mega Bowl?
Just getting to know the people, because we have people from I'm from Wisconsin. We have people from Georgia. We have people from Seattle playing this, just all over. Like that's my goal. I'd like to reach into a different country if I potentially could, and just get to know people. And it's just exciting for me. Like it's just another challenge. You know, I've been lucky to be successful in redraft and dynasty leagues. And I feel like, you know, if I win a league with 192, even down the road with 1,000 people, that's probably going to be my biggest success in fantasy football. Like it's a lot of luck, but yeah, there's some skill to it. So yeah, I would say most off just getting to know people, especially like you guys. You know, you guys, I listen to you guys on a weekly basis. You guys are killing it, you know, just getting to, otherwise I wouldn't have known you guys. So just getting to know different people around the dynasty community, being able to talk. I have constantly people that I've never spoke to emailing me or Facebooking and texting me, hey, would you do this trade? You know, would you do this and that? So like I said, my addiction just keeps growing. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and year after year, this is, I mean, you're kind of seeing it, and our listeners have kind of seen it, that we've kind of grown as well. It started out as me writing a blog. Kevin would help me with some stats. Me and Kevin hopped on a podcast about a year ago, just doing it for our league, and now it's kind of grown into something where we're really excited about it, and we're happy to have you on. Couple more quick questions. Number one, if people want to sign up for Mega Bowl, how do they do that?
Yep. So there's two different ways you can contact me. You can reach me by email. It's DereksMegaBowl@yahoo.com. So that's DereksMegaBowl @yahoo.com. Or you can reach me on Twitter @DereksMegaBowl. Those are probably your two best avenues to reach me. You guys just, there's a little fee to it, but it's pretty minimal, and I can get you guys registered.
Absolutely. And then last question, give us a hot take. Who's your guy that you're really excited for this year? What team are you on? What's going on?
Yeah. So, well, I'm a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan. I'm not going to be a homer and say CeeDee Lamb's going to be wide receiver one. But I'm kind of going similar to where I was at last year, for both dynasty and redraft. My big buy was DeAndre Swift last year. He was a must get. Luckily I was able to get him in the fourth round in most of my leagues. But this year, and this is, you know, I was on this early and now I'm starting to hear it more and more, but Travis Etienne, he is my guy. You know, people get scared by the Jacksonville offense, but guess what? They're always going to be playing from behind. That's Trevor Lawrence's boy. He's going to drop down. If you're in a PPR league, I think he's a great get, especially if you're getting him in the fourth, potentially even fifth round. So
yeah, great take. I'm also really high on Travis Etienne.
You heard it here first, folks. If you're in Derek's division, scoop yes. up Etienne.
Yeah, let's not do that.
All right. Well, thanks, Derek, for coming on, man. Great stuff. Hopefully we can get you on a little closer to the beginning of the season. Make one last push for Mega Bowl, and hopefully it's just going to be an awesome year. We're excited to play.
Yes, thanks for having me, guys. Keep killing it, and I hope to join you guys here soon. So, thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks, Derek.
Guys. Derek, you want to hang on for one quick second?
Yep.
So, You mentioned you wanted to plug Supps. Is that, did you have a read that you wanted to do or?
So he reached out to me. He actually went deep in, he's a baseball coach and they went deep in the playoffs. So he's like, and they just went on vacation. He's like, I'll get to this at some point. Right. I just information. I wouldn't worry about it. I appreciate you guys asking. Yeah. Unless he did, I'm not going to make a big deal about it.
Hey, hey, we want Mega Bowl to get up to 1,000 people too. So that means, you know, potentially when I win, more money in my pocket.
I'm going to keep promoting you guys. So the more people we get, the more fun you're going to get as well. So thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah. See you, Derek. Yeah,
thanks, Derek.
Well, what an absolute blast of an episode, Kevin. We had, we have our rookies, landing spots, top tens. I mean, if there's a vote, Logan dominated the top tens accuracy. We'll see how they end up later in the season. I will admit you had a tougher job in the tight end department, but fun episode. Derek came on, Kevin.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good time. And, you know, we're going to sell it again. Go sign up for Derek's Mega Bowl. I don't know about you, but it was, I mean, the TKD league is reserved for, you know, my favorite fantasy league. But Mega Bowl, you know, that's the most fun I've had. And it's new and different. I would definitely encourage anybody and everybody to go sign up. Give it a go.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, when you're adding a fantasy league, you're trying to like make as little of a time commitment as possible. And the way that Mega Bowl works is, you know, it's not, you don't have to grind. You don't have to text people. You know, there's your roster is kind of set. You got to make a few waivers every now and then, but you know, it's low maintenance, high fun. And that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. And it's a blast. They do a really good job over there.
Yeah, well, Kevin, that's going to be it for Moen McGee. You might see us a little more frequently now as we're getting close. We're going to try to give you that content that gets you through this off season. But, you know, Kevin, we got to take time to get these takes up. They don't just spit out.
Yeah, speaking of takes, I don't know if we ripped on the Chiefs a single time in this episode.
I had Patrick Mahomes at third on my quarterback list, so I figured.
Okay. Okay. Just say something bad about Juju quick.
Oh, that TikTok bitch ass is going to finish outside the top 40 receivers in fantasy this year.
Perfect. You've been listening to Moen McGee on Fantasy. We'll see you next time.
Yeah.